Agora, meu bem, você se prepara para mudar totalmente sua visão sobre o seu trabalho, porque eu vou te ensinar sobre diferenciação e te mostrar a diferença absurda que existe entre preço e valor. E isso vai te deixar de noite pensando como ser diferente e como agregar valor ao seu trabalho. E eu digo isso porque muita gente ainda acha que ter muito cliente é sorte e que ter clientes apaixonados acontece assim por acaso, sendo que tem um caminho enorme percorrido para alcançar isso. E nossa, como a gente se engana, né? Se compara e se diminui pensando que é fácil vendo os outros, né? A gente fica se achando a pior fotógrafa do planeta quando não consegue cliente, sendo que na verdade a gente só não tem ou não tá aplicando as estratégias certas, porque ninguém nunca falou disso e a gente se concentrou só em estudar sobre equipamento, sobre direção, sobre luz, etc. Só que essa parte aqui, apesar de ser difícil, é a que nos permite, nos deixa mais perto de viver de fotografia e ter resultado. Inclusive, por ser difícil, é que nem todo mundo consegue. Então, ao invés de ver isso como um problema, entenda como uma vantagem, porque você está aqui se especializando e tem essa oportunidade de crescimento, beleza? Agora, eu quero te fazer algumas perguntas. Você já comprou ou desejou algo que você sabia que o preço era mais alto, mas que valia a pena pagar mais caro, mesmo assim? Sim ou não? E ao desejar esse produto ou serviço que era caro, você já teve alguma pessoa que tinha uma opinião diferente da sua e que nunca pagaria por aquilo e achava até maluquice você querer gastar tanto dinheiro nisso? Pode ser com tudo, tá, gente? Carro, restaurante, uma casa, um sapato, um sofá, uma geladeira, uma roupa, um cabeleireiro, um procedimento estético, qualquer coisa que era caro, você sabia do preço monetário, mas que você entendia o valor daquilo e sabia que valia a pena. E a situação contrária também vale a pena de pensar, tá? Você já achou alguém doido por pagar um preço em algo que para você não faz o menor sentido? Você acha bobeira ou investiria em um produto mais simples para poder pagar menos e aquela pessoa não abre mão de ser aquele produto específico? Você com certeza se identificou ou lembrou de alguma situação, porque todo mundo passa por isso em vários momentos da vida. E essa diferença de percepção do que vale a pena pagar o preço ou não é o que a gente chama de valor. Quanto mais o cliente percebe que existe valor naquilo, mais ele vai estar disposto a pagar por aquele produto ou serviço. E é por isso que às vezes a gente sabe que algo é caro ou o preço está acima do mercado, mas a gente compra mesmo assim. Porque o que você leva tem muito mais significado do que o valor monetário que você paga, né, por aquilo. Quem ama carro, por exemplo, muitas vezes investe um dinheiro alto no banco de couro, no motor, nas rodas, e aquilo dali, aos olhos de uma outra pessoa que não vê tanto valor num carro, é uma gastança desnecessária. Mas a satisfação pessoal do cliente que ama aquilo fez valer cada centavo. Então, a percepção de valor varia de pessoa para pessoa. Depende do grau de utilidade disso para ela, da satisfação e do prazer que isso vai gerar, do quanto aquela coisa, né, resolve um problema específico ou realiza um sonho. E é por isso que às vezes tem cliente que vai ser fanático pelo que você faz e só vai querer você e vai pagar o preço que for, e outros vão sempre enrolar, buscar preço, fazer milhões de perguntas, tentar tirar uma coisa ou outra, é por conta dessa percepção de valor. Um carro, como eu estava dizendo, de 400 mil reais tem o mesmo preço para todo mundo, mas a percepção de valor é diferente para cada pessoa. Quem valoriza e deseja isso, paga. Quem dá valor, mas não deseja tanto assim, compra, mas não aquele modelo mais caro. Ele compra um mais simples. E quem não valoriza, não deseja ou não precisa, acha desnecessário. E isso acontece também com a nossa fotografia. Umas pessoas valorizam e outras não. Umas valorizam mais e outras menos. Umas se conectam e se identificam mais com um profissional, outras se identificam mais com outros. Porém, só criar valor não basta. É essencial e responsabilidade sua tangibilizar, ou seja, tornar visível ao cliente esse valor agregado. Por isso, a forma como você fala, escreve e divulga sobre o seu próprio trabalho dita o tipo de cliente que vai ser atraído e o seu foco sempre tem que ser o cliente que percebe esse valor e deseja o seu trabalho e não o seu preço. E isso não é construído do dia para a noite fazendo uma coisa aqui e outra ali. Principalmente porque para nós é muito óbvio o valor, principalmente sentimental, da fotografia, mas para o cliente não é tão óbvio assim. Por isso, toda a sua empresa vai ser modelada para ser incrível e para o cliente ficar encantado com tudo que você faz. Você vai ganhar ele pelo seu estilo de fotografia, por ter um trabalho único, pelo seu olhar, a forma como você capta os momentos, mas também pelo seu atendimento, pela sua entrega, pela sua história, sua atenção aos detalhes, sua energia pessoalmente, seus produtos, tudo isso. E assim, eles não vão ser só clientes, eles vão ser também os seus maiores fãs. E por isso que eu sempre digo que não adianta atrair o cliente que tem mais dinheiro, porque não necessariamente ter mais dinheiro está envolvido ali com valorizar ou não. Então você consegue entender melhor essa diferença entre preço e valor e como isso pode te tirar da briga por preço com o concorrente e te levar para um nível mais avançado na experiência do cliente? E uma outra coisa que você sempre precisa ter em mente é que a tomada de decisão para uma compra sempre vai ser racional ou emocional. Então, se o seu cliente achar que você e o seu concorrente vendem a mesma coisa sem ver nada além disso, ele vai optar pelo que tem o menor preço por achar que está fazendo um bom negócio. Por isso, você vai parar de vender algo superficial para o seu cliente, como eu vendo um pacote com 40 fotos. Foto qualquer um pode vender, mas você vai vender a história da família, uma experiência, uma transformação na vida da pessoa, uma memória que vai durar para o resto da vida. Você vai vender a verdade daquela família que é feliz e unida mesmo com os altos e baixos e dificuldades no dia a dia. Você mostra que no final do dia o que importa, o que traz paz na hora de dormir é o sorriso dos filhos. Cara, você entende como isso é muito mais profundo e gratificante e você vai ser escolhido por captar e transmitir isso nas suas fotos? Quando eu entendi que o meu trabalho não se tratava apenas de uma quantidade de fotos entregues, meu mundo se abriu. E assim como o meu crescimento só depende de mim, o seu sucesso também só depende de você e de mudar essa chavinha aí. Por isso, eu digo tanto que normalmente o problema maior não está no concorrente, na cidade, no equipamento. Está na forma como você vende, na percepção de valor que você gera no cliente através das suas fotos, das suas histórias e do seu diferencial. Pessoas não compram o que você faz só. Pessoas compram o porquê você faz isso. E assim, para atrair clientes que valorizam e que são de verdade o seu público-alvo ideal, você vai inverter toda a sua comunicação e o seu posicionamento para vender valor e não preço, começando pelo seu porquê. Você vai assistir agora um vídeo muito importante para a gente fechar todo o raciocínio dessa aula aqui e dar base para todo o resto que vem depois.
How do you explain when things don't go as we assume? Or better, how do you explain when others are able to achieve things that seem to defy all of the assumptions? For example, why is Apple so innovative? Year after year after year after year, they're more innovative than all their competition. And yet, they're just a computer company. They're just like everyone else. They have the same access to the same talent, the same agencies, the same consultants, the same media. Then why is it that they seem to have something different? Why is it that Martin Luther King led the civil rights movement? He wasn't the only man who suffered in a pre-civil rights America, and he certainly wasn't the only great orator of the day. Why him? And why is it that the Wright brothers were able to figure out controlled powered man flight when there were certainly other teams who were better qualified, better funded, and they didn't achieve powered man flight, and the Wright brothers beat them to it? There's something else at play here. About 3.5 years ago, I made a discovery, and this discovery profoundly changed my view on how I thought the world worked, and it even profoundly changed the way in which I operate in it. As it turns out, there's a pattern. As it turns out, all the great and inspiring leaders and organizations in the world, whether it's Apple or Martin Luther King or the Wright brothers, they all think, act, and communicate the exact same way, and it's the complete opposite to everyone else. All I did was codify it. And it's probably the world's simplest idea. I call it the golden circle. Why, how, what? this little idea explains why some organizations and some leaders are able to inspire where others aren't. Let me define the terms really quickly. Every single person, every single organization on the planet knows what they do 100%. Some know how they do it, whether you call it your differentiating value proposition or your proprietary process or your USP. But very, very few people or organizations know why they do what they do. And by why, I don't mean to make a profit. That's a result. It's always a result. By why, I mean what's your purpose? What's your cause? What's your belief? Why does your organization exist? Why do you get out of bed in the morning? And why should anyone care? Well, as a result, the way we think, the way we act, the way we communicate is from the outside in. It's obvious. We go from the clearest thing to the fuzziest thing. But the inspired leaders and the inspired organizations, regardless of their size, regardless of their industry, all think, act, and communicate from the inside out. Let me give you an example. I use Apple because they're easy to understand and everybody gets it. If Apple were like everyone else, a marketing message from them might sound like this. We make great computers. They're beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. Want to buy one? Meh. And that's how most of us communicate. That's how most marketing is done, that's how most sales is done, and that's how most of us communicate interpersonally. We say what we do, we say how we're different or how we're better, and we expect some sort of behavior, a purchase, a vote, something like that. Here's our new law firm. We have the best lawyers with the biggest clients. We have, you know, we always perform for our clients, do business with us. Here's our new car. It gets great gas mileage, it has, you know, leather seats. Buy our car. But it's uninspiring. Here's how Apple actually communicates. Everything we do, we believe in challenging the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. The way we challenge the status quo is by making our products beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. We just happen to make great computers. Want to buy one? Totally different, right? You ready to buy a computer from me? All I did was reverse the order of the information. What it proves to us is that people don't buy what you do, people buy why you do it. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. This explains why every single person in this room is perfectly comfortable buying a computer from Apple. But we're also perfectly comfortable buying an MP3 player from Apple, or a phone from Apple, or a DVR from Apple. But as I said before, Apple's just a computer company. There's nothing that distinguishes them structurally from any of their competitors. Their competitors are all equally qualified to make all of these products. In fact, they tried. A few years ago, Gateway came out with flat screen TVs. They're eminently qualified to make flat screen TVs. They've been making flat screen monitors for years. Nobody bought one. And Dell. Dell came out with MP3 players and PDAs. And they make great quality products, and they can make perfectly well-designed products, and nobody bought one. In fact, talking about it now, we can't even imagine buying an MP3 player from Dell. Why would you buy an MP3 player from a computer company? But we do it every day. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. The goal is not to do business with anybody, with everybody who needs what you have. The goal is to do business with people who believe what you believe. Here's the best part. None of what I'm telling you is my opinion. It's all grounded in the tenets of biology, not psychology, biology. If you look at a cross-section of the human brain looking from the top down, what you see is the human brain is actually broken into three major components that correlate perfectly with the golden circle. Our newest brain, our Homo sapien brain, our neocortex, corresponds with the what level. The neocortex is responsible for all of our rational and analytical thought and language. The middle two sections make up our limbic brains, and our limbic brains are responsible for all of our feelings, like trust and loyalty. It's also responsible for all human behavior, all decision-making, and it has no capacity for language. In other words, when we communicate from the outside in, yes, people can understand vast amounts of complicated information like features and benefits and facts and figures. It just doesn't drive behavior. When we communicate from the inside out, we're talking directly to the part of the brain that controls behavior, and then we allow people to rationalize it with the tangible things we say and do. This is where gut decisions come from. You know, sometimes you can give somebody all the facts and your figures, and they say, I know what all the facts and details say, but it just doesn't feel right. Why would we use that verb? It doesn't feel right. Because the part of the brain that controls decision-making doesn't control language. And the best we can muster up is, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right. Or sometimes you say you're leading with your heart or you're leading with your soul. Well, I hate to break it to you, those aren't other body parts controlling your behavior. It's all happening here in your limbic brain, the part of the brain that controls decision-making and not language. But if you don't know why you do what you do, and people respond to why you do what you do, then how will anybody... How will you ever get people to vote for you or buy something from you or, more importantly, be loyal and want to be a part of what it is that you do? Again, the goal is not just to sell people who need what you have. The goal is to sell to people who believe what you believe. The goal is not just to hire people who need a job. It's to hire people who believe what you believe. I always say that, you know, there's hire people just because they can do a job, they'll work for your money. But if you hire people who believe what you believe, they work for you with blood and sweat and tears. And nowhere else is there a better example of this than with the Wright brothers. Most people don't know about Samuel Pierpont Langley. And back in the early 20th century, the pursuit of powered man flight was like the dot-com of the day. Everybody was trying it. And Samuel Pierpont Langley had what we assume to be the recipe for success. I mean, even now, you ask people, why did your product or why did your company fail? And people always give you the same permutation of the same three things. Undercapitalized, the wrong people, bad market conditions. It's always the same three things. So let's explore that. Samuel Pierpont Langley was given $50,000 by the War Department to figure out this flying machine. Money was no problem. He held a seat at Harvard and worked at the Smithsonian and was extremely well-connected. He knew all the big minds of the day. He hired the best minds money could find, and the market conditions were fantastic. The New York Times followed him around everywhere, and everyone was rooting for Langley. And how come we've never heard of Samuel Pierpont Langley? A few hundred miles away in Dayton, Ohio, Orville and Wilbur Wright. They had none of what we consider to be the recipe for success. They had no money. They paid for their dream with the proceeds from their bicycle shop. Not a single person on the Wright brothers' team had a college education, not even Orville or Wilbur. And the New York Times followed them around nowhere. The difference was Orville and Wilbur were driven by a cause, by a purpose, by a belief. They believed that if they could figure out this flying machine, it'll change the course of the world. Samuel Pierpont Langley was different. He wanted to be rich, and he wanted to be famous. He was in pursuit of the result. He was in pursuit of the riches. And lo and behold, look what happened. The people who believed in the Wright brothers' dream worked with them with blood and sweat and tears. The others just worked for the paycheck. And they tell stories of how every time the Wright brothers went out, they would have to take five sets of parts, because that's how many times they would crash before they came in for supper. And eventually, on December 17th, 1903, the Wright brothers took flight, and no one was there to even experience it. We found out about it a few days later. And further proof that Langley was motivated by the wrong thing, the day the Wright brothers took flight, he quit. He could have said, "That's an amazing discovery, guys, and I will improve upon your technology." But he didn't. He wasn't first. He didn't get rich. He didn't get famous. So he quit. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And if you talk about what you believe, you will attract those who believe what you believe. Well, why is it important to attract those who believe what you believe? Something called the law of diffusion of innovation. And if you don't know the law, you definitely know the terminology. The first 2.5% of our population are our innovators. The next 13.5% of our population are our early adopters. The next 34% are your early majority, your late majority, and your laggards. The only reason these people buy touch-tone phones is because you can't buy rotary phones anymore. We all sit at various places at various times on the scale, but what the law of diffusion of innovation tells us is that if you want mass market success or mass market acceptance of an idea, you cannot have it until you achieve this tipping point. Between 15 and 18% market penetration, and then the system tips. And I love asking businesses, what's your conversion on new business? And they love to tell you, oh, it's about 10%, proudly. Well, you can trip over 10% of the customers. We all have about 10% who just get it. That's how we describe them, right? That's like that gut feeling. Oh, they just get it. The problem is, how do you find the ones that just get it before you're doing business with them versus the ones who don't get it? So it's this here, this little gap, that you have to close, as Jeffrey Moore calls it, crossing the chasm. Because you see, the early majority will not try something until someone else has tried it first. And these guys, the innovators and the early adopters, they're comfortable making those gut decisions. They're more comfortable making those intuitive decisions that are driven by what they believe about the world and not just what product is available. These are the people who stood online for 6 hours to buy an iPhone when they first came out, when you could have just walked into the store the next week and bought one off the shelf. These are the people who spent $40,000 on flat-screen TVs when they first came out, even though the technology was substandard. And by the way, they didn't do it because the technology was so great. They did it for themselves. It's because they wanted to be first. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And what you do simply proves what you believe. In fact, people will do the things that prove what they believe. The reason that person bought the iPhone in line for six hours, was because of what they believed about the world and how they wanted everybody to see them. They were first. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. So let me give you a famous example, a famous failure and a famous success of the law of diffusion of innovation. First, the famous failure. It's a commercial example. As we said before a second ago, the recipe for success is money and the right people and the right marketing conditions, right? You should have success then. Look at TiVo. From the time TiVo came out about 8 or 9 years ago to this current day, they are the single highest quality product on the market. Hands down, there is no dispute. They were extremely well-funded. Market conditions were fantastic. I mean, we use TiVo as a verb. I TiVo stuff on my piece of junk Time Warner DVR all the time. But TiVo is a commercial failure. They've never made money. And when they went IPO, their stock was at about $30 or $40 and then plummeted, and it's never traded above 10. In fact, I don't think it's even traded above 6, except for a couple of little spikes. Because you see, when TiVo launched their product, they told us all what they had. They said, we have a product that pauses live TV, skips commercials, rewinds live TV and memorizes your viewing habits without you even asking. And the cynical majority said, we don't believe you. We don't need it. We don't like it. You're scaring us. What if they had said, if you're the kind of person who likes to have total control over every aspect of your life, boy, do we have a product for you. It pauses live TV, skips commercials, memorizes your viewing habits, etc., etc. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it, and what you do simply serves as the proof of what you believe. Now let me give you a successful example of the law of diffusion of innovation. In the summer of 1963, 250,000 people showed up on the Mall in Washington to hear Dr. King speak. They sent out no invitations, and there was no website to check the date. How do you do that? Well, Dr. King wasn't the only man in America who was a great orator. He wasn't the only man in America who suffered in a pre-civil rights America. In fact, some of his ideas were bad. But he had a gift. He didn't go around telling people what needed to change in America. He went around and told people what he believed. I believe, I believe, I believe, he told people. And people who believed what he believed took his cause and they made it their own, and they told people. And some of those people created structures to get the word out to even more people. And lo and behold, 250,000 people showed up on the right day, on the right time, to hear him speak. How many of them showed up for him? Zero. They showed up for themselves. It's what they believed about America that got them to travel on a bus for 8 hours to stand in the sun in Washington in the middle of August. It's what they believed. And it wasn't about black versus white. 25% of the audience was white. Dr. King believed that there are two types of laws in this world, those that are made by a higher authority and those that are made by man. And not until all the laws that are made by man are consistent with the laws that are made by the higher authority, will we live in a just world? It just so happens that the civil rights movement was the perfect thing to help him bring his cause to life. We followed him not for him, but for ourselves. And by the way, he gave the I have a dream speech, not the I have a plan speech. Listen to politicians now with their comprehensive 12-point plans. They're not inspiring anybody. Because there are leaders and there are those who lead. Leaders hold a position of power or authority, but those who lead inspire us. Whether they're individuals or organizations, we follow those who lead, not because we have to, but because we want to. We follow those who lead, not for them, but for ourselves. And it's those who start with why that have the ability to inspire those around them or find others who inspire them. Thank you very much.